Muhammad for taking the time to talk to us. Tune in on Friday, July 31st at 5 p.m. for our next episode on homelessness and harm reduction.
If you have flu-like or COVID-19-like symptoms, such as fever, cough, loss of taste or smell, or if you have been in contact with someone infected with the virus, it's essential to get tested and to follow isolation instructions, even if you're vaccinated. Screening remains one of the best ways to limit outbreaks. To find out more, visit quebec.ca/test-covid-19. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. On CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between, professional student and community productions in and around Montreal, Chauchage, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, November the 4th, 2021. On tonight's show, Ellen David wrangles four iconic Montreal wits for a cathartic comedy extravaganza.
It's quick and dirty.
Our headline, our poster said, "You've masked, you've vaxxed, now it's time to laugh." That's kind of our motto.
Zach Fraser at the helm of Infinitheater's return to the stage, directing an actor on his visit to his Tunisian great-grandmother.
Especially in a time where a lot of theaters are feeling nervous about coming back and the risks of coming back to live theater, I think it's a nice piece for that. It's an intimate piece. We're okay. We don't need a big crowd to make it magical here. It's very simple storytelling, but it also transports you.
And choreographer Lynn No on her maze of a dance show where you decide what to watch and for how long.
You choose where you see and where you sit and where you walk, and your perspective is gonna give something different from the other person who's looking at it from another place.
But before we begin, I wanted to mention the final showing of a Canadian stage giant. Martha Henry recently passed away at the age of 83, a giant of the stage here in Canada. Although she was born and raised in Detroit, she came here to perform, eventually studying at the National Theatre School in Montreal. Back in 1961, she and her fellow students traveled to Stratford to perform for the Festival Company, and Martha caught the eye of then artistic director Michael Langham. He offered her a role in the company for the following season at Stratford, but that would mean Martha would have to leave NTS without her degree. But the school told her to take the offer, and they awarded her diploma regardless, making Martha Henry the first ever graduate at the National Theatre School, ahead of its inaugural graduating class. Martha Henry played a raft of roles, including Prospero in The Tempest at the age of 80 just 3 years ago. She also directed multiple plays and for a time was one of the four ruling directors at Stratford. Henry died of cancer shortly after midnight on October 21st. At her home in Stratford, just 12 days after her final stage appearance in Three Tall Women. J. Kelly Nestruck, who is the Globe and Mail theater critic and writer, he wrote of her work in that show, quote, Henry's performance is a reminder of how much more daringly theatrical her generation of stage actors, she's now in her 80s, can be. Martha Henry, a daring grand dame of the Canadian stage, was 83. Ellen David wears many hats. She is an actor, director, and now Anglo Wrangler. That is the funny new title that Ellen says she has earned, overseeing a brand new comedy show starring four iconic Montreal wits. Musical comedians Bowser and Blue, aka George Bowser and Rick Blue, longtime Gazette columnist Josh Fried, you can read him every Saturday morning, and Terry Mosher, also known as Aislinn, the acclaimed editorial cartoonist for the Montreal Gazette. Yes, they all have gray hair and are into their golden years, but these four funny guys have been making the English community laugh for decades through language issues, referendums, and the general silliness of living in this province. They first assembled back in 2005 as Four Anglos of the Apocalypse, then in 2008 with a show called The 25th Century Belongs to Canada, and 13 years later, they return with a new show called Four Anglos Surviving the COVID Apocalypse. They are still busy. Fried has a new series of essays coming out. Mosher has a compilation of COVID comics from around the world. There's also a new Canada Post stamp devoted to his legacy. It's part of a series of stamps devoted to the country's editorial cartoonists. Now, every show that these four guys have put on has one connection. They premiered at Theatre Lac Brome in Knowlton in the townships, where Ellen David is now artistic and executive director. She is the one overseeing the current show, which opened to sold-out crowds last weekend and now travels to Montreal's St. Jacques Centre this weekend and next. I spoke with Ellen David last week, just before the show officially opened at Théâtre Lac Brome in Knowlton. Welcome back to Upstage, Ellen. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Great, thank you. Reaching you just before the big opening weekend of the Four Anglo, I guess the full title is Four Anglo Horsemen of the COVID Apocalypse.
No. The title of this particular incarnation of the Four Anglos is Four Anglos Surviving the COVID Apocalypse.
Now, four very talented, very funny men, well-known in our community. But I mean, I got to imagine there's a lot of ego going on here. How do you handle these four guys and get them to put together a show that's going to run on time and make people laugh?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because in my bio, we had like little quick blurbs about each of us, and mine is called Four Anglo Wrangler. That's what I do. And and I'll have a one woman show after called Surviving the Four Anglos. But no, I mean, listen, they are who they are. They are very well known. They are incredibly talented. They're gifted individuals. And, you know, they have a unique perspective on the world, and they tell it from their, you know, with their art form. Josh with writing and columns and films, and Terry obviously with cartoons, and Bowser and Blue with their music, and sort of combine it all together in a moment like this, when all of us universally are reflecting on what we've experienced. I think it's such a valuable time for this kind of material and for these four artists to get together and tell that story.
I think there certainly is a lot to reflect on and kvetch about, to complain about. What to you are some of the principal kind of anxieties or criticisms that really shine through that you think are really going to hit home with audiences right now?
Well, I think what happens is, I've created an opening soundscape where we put ourselves in the context of where we were in March 2020 when all this began. It's like breaking news. We interrupt this, you know, something was beginning back then. And the story of that we're going to see on stage is going to follow that journey, not necessarily chronologically, but it's going to highlight different areas and elements that we all went through as we collectively took this, we didn't know how long this winding road would be, but we were moving down this path. So I think we address a lot of the things. What is it at the beginning? You know, how long is it going to be? The opening song is "This Won't Last." And, you know, of course, we know all these, a couple of years almost later, it did last, and it, you know, renewed itself and came back, back with a vengeance in a different way. But through then, we've all individually and collectively made steps to figure out how to live with us. Those of us who did survive, who are still here, some are surviving. I wouldn't say people are thriving. I think it's taken a toll. It is something that we've had to grapple with. The word pivot came up. We've learned to do things in a different way. We're trying to figure out how many of those things are we going to bring forward with us as we move forward, you know, Zoom meetings and working from home and all of this virtual world that we've found ourselves in. And in terms of including the arts as well, right? When we had to turn around and present work and, you know, artists were dying to create, we ended up doing a lot of it virtually. Some people have had a glut of it and are not interested in seeing that anymore. And other people say, oh, this is a great option for us. So it opened up a whole other world for us as it was shutting down another part of our world. So I think we take that journey with these gentlemen. And when we did a workshop a couple of months ago, and we had a very small invited audience. And what we found interesting is that it's funny. They're all very funny, but it's very moving as well. Some of the songs, for instance, there's one the Bowser and Blues sing about unsung heroes, as Terry is illustrating the truckers and the healthcare workers and the teachers and the suppliers. And I mean, just get shivers now thinking about it and what all of those people were providing for us as we were struggling to, you know, have our needs met. I think it's just, it's reflective of this whole experience. And initially the title was Four Anglos Survive the COVID Apocalypse, but we've changed it to surviving because we're not out of it, right? COVID exists and COVID is affecting our lives.
We are definitely not through it yet, but you know, it's still a good point to look back and reflect at any point, we'd say, right? Even though the light is still, we can see the light now. Yes. I'm speaking with Ellen David, who is the director of the Four Anglo Horsemen.
No, there's no horsemen. They're on a horse. Four Anglos Surviving the COVID Apocalypse. There's my phone ringing, I think, for ticket sales because we're almost sold out. But I'll let
Yeah. Well, let's ask about the, let's discuss the anticipation, the reaction from people knowing that you're putting on these four comedy stars together.
Yes. People are really excited. We were fortunate in that we're presenting it in a moment where, as of October 8th, the rules have changed. We're allowed to open fully, so we can fill our 161-seat, very intimate theater, and we are filling it up. We're sold out for Saturday's matinee at Theatre Lac Brome, and we have very few tickets left for Saturday night and Sunday matinee. And, you know, we have to do vax passports, obviously, so everything requires extra labor and extra care to make sure that people are safe. You know, sanitizing, hand cleansing and washing. They talk about that in the show. They do a song about that. And then people have to wear their mask completely during the experience. Initially, when we were welcoming half audiences or having, you know, 2 meters between bubbles, people were able to take off their masks when everybody was social distance, but now everybody has to wear the mask. So there is great anticipation. And also we will be taking it to Montreal. We're going to Centre Saint-Jacques after this run and maybe onwards after. We'll see how it goes. And so I think people are eager. And what was really beautiful about this experience of doing the workshop and having a few individuals and now seeing that the audience is expanding to we can house more people and entertain more people and move more people is the experience of talking about something like this that separated us, that shut down our industry, especially our industry, as well as many, many others. They do a song called No Gigs at All, where, you know, and Terry is illustrating it beautifully with cartoons, and Josh is describing the experience, and it's illustrated by Terry's cartoons. I lost my train of thought there for a second. I'm thinking of just the show and so many things. The collective experience of being in that room, bearing witness to four, you know, really perceptive individuals commenting on the experience, and then being able to be in the room and witness all of this. You know, Josh writes his columns for the Gazette. He writes, you know, whatever he's writing he's not interacting necessarily with the readers. And here's a chance to express himself and to have somebody really firsthand, you know, hear it, see it, palpably feel it. And just that experience is so moving that we're somewhat through it. You know, we are survivors, and we can tell that story, and we can tell it to people who are there live to hear it.
And yeah, he's leaping off the page, so to speak.
Literally.
So how does this work to bring in a cartoon? You've given us a little hint by talking about how Terry Mosher Aislinn's cartoons will be writ large on the stage. But essentially, you've got two performers who are used to being live and bringing that persona. Josh is a writer. Terry, he writes in a way, but he's an artist. Yes. Like, how does that come together for a visual performance?
Well, we have, what I've done is I've created three zones for the performers. And plus we have the zone of the screen where that's our access to all the cartoons. Josh is sort of a narrator and he's taking us through the steps, and Bowser and Blue are commenting through song. And Terry, of course, is illustrating with his cartoons. It's not only his cartoons, by the way, he has been blessed to have over 100 cartoons from 38 different nations contributed to the show, as well as to a book that he has coming up about all this experience. One of them being, as a matter of fact, Montrealer Barry Blitt, who I've known from way back, grew up in the same neighborhood, and he won the Pulitzer Prize recently. He does cartoon covers for The New Yorker.
The New Yorker, yeah.
Yeah, so we go between the different performers as we tell the story and the journey and the different sections. And right center stage is a 4x3 ratio screen. So the cartoons are sized properly. It's not like a movie where there'll be empty space and that kind of letterbox ratio, but it is very, it's been sized and worked and tweaked to honor those cartoons. And one of the, for instance, Josh will give his raps or his, you know, his talks or do his section, and Terry is illustrating. And we're lighting it as well to enhance the experience. And Bowser and Blue will sing, and Terry's illustrating. And Terry speaks as well. Aislinn also has his own contributions verbally with different for different moments. He is the one who's controlling the cartoons and all the images and timing everything. So everybody has an interplay, and everybody is propelling the story forward with their own unique style of how they contribute to it through song, through images, and through word, spoken word.
I'm so excited to see that actual interplay happening because I bet it's really magic on stage.
Yes.
And speaking with Ellen David, who is the director of The Four Anglos Survive the COVID Apocalypse, also artistic and executive director at Théâtre Lac Brome, Theatre Lac Brome. Ellen, getting ready for opening weekend. I'm curious to know if everyone gets along. Do we have like a paisible situation where these guys are all like comrades in arms, or is it like the Beatles where there's good times and bad times? Because I know that there could be some orneriness, I would expect. I've witnessed some of it from time to time with these fellows, but or do they get along like a house on fire?
Well, I mean, as I said, I want to survive the Four Anglos, so I can't reveal too much. But, you know, they're all so established and so expert in their field that they all have their opinions about how they, you know, things should move. The script, this, they've worked on this for, you know, over a year. There was an idea to kind of come back as the Four Anglos, as this entity that they have, and comment on the COVID experience. So things have been tweaked, things have been shortened, things have been added, things have been cut. So they've been working together, but generally speaking, everyone is here to give the best experience to the audience and to tell this story in a way. So, yeah, like I said, I'm the Anglo Wrangler. I'm finding a way that everybody's honored, everybody has a say, and that we can move forward and, you know, and get on stage.
Are you the only person who could pull this off? Because I feel like this is a very special job that you're undertaking.
That's very, I don't know, Sarah. I have no, I mean, you know, who knows? I don't know who, you know, I'm the one that, you know, Josh asked me, I guess it was not this summer, but the summer before, at some point said to me, hey, we're thinking of coming back as the Four Anglos. Well, we have an idea. He first said, I have an idea. We want to pitch to you. So we all got on a Zoom and we talked about it. And, it started then. And so it was fun to think that you're kind of living this experience, but at the same time, there's a creative outlet for it that I'm able to participate in. And really, I mean, I'm just, it's all of their work and their hard work and what they've done and what they brought to it. And I'm just sort of trying to compose it and give them an environment and, you know, direct them where I can, but they are, you know, they're experts in their field and they know what they're doing. What I did is create zones for them, as I mentioned, that sort of represent them individually. We can't necessarily do a set, and there's not a lot of, it's not a play. It's a different kind of play. And so Josh, you know, he's got a film at one point, he talks about his messy room and his messy office. So I've tried to create an environment that really would illustrate the messy writer. And then there's an artistic zone that Terry's in. There were cartoonists at work, and we see, we see some of his material. And of course, Bowser and Blue have toured for years. Theirs is a musical zone with all their instruments and their posters and their touring jackets. And their, so it's kind of three unique spaces on stage. That's something we can create at Lac Brome, because it is a theater space. St. Jack's has a different kind of appeal in that it's an incredibly beautiful church. It's actually where Terry Mosher was baptized. So there's that unique tie-in. It's lovely that we have that connection. And, you know, we're going to figure it out. I have Kelsey Ray, who's my production coordinator, working with me, and we're going to figure out how we can translate that experience to this other space and stage. And we'll, you know, whatever that, but it's already so beautiful and so interesting and so, you know, apocalyptic in a way in its evocation.
Now, they had performed together previously, right? I don't know how far back that was.
They, I'm trying to remember exactly the dates. I think, you know, maybe 4 to 5 years. They did the four Anglos with the horsemen of the whatever that, survive them. I can't remember the titles exactly. And then there was another one about connected to Quebec and Canada. And they premiered them here at Theatre Lac Brome, and then they went on to do them at Centaur and other spaces. So it's nice to have them back, certainly, to do their Four Anglos production here at this space, and then to move forward. So yes, they have done this before. Terry and Josh do book tours and meetings and signings, and of course Bowser and Blue appear. We had Bowser and Blue here not long ago on our stage, and they're favorites in the area. But to bring them all together again for the third time as Four Anglos, I think is pretty special.
And is it like getting the game back together? Like once they're all together in the same room again, it's kind of just picking up like no time has passed?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think they're always in touch, and, you know, Bowser and Blue are always, they have a relationship, obviously working together on their material. And I think they have a shorthand of how they like to work and who does what. And, you know, everybody funnels their material. It goes through Terry so that he can see what he wants to illustrate with. And and then, you know, we work it out. We think maybe that's too long. This is so then it becomes a matter of really piecing a script together and finding the best way to. But then, you know, after a workshop, they went off and recognized, you know, I gave notes and we had some feedback, and then we're adjusting, at that point they went off and did their own thing and, you know, eliminated some material, shortened things, and then coming up with a version that we even made some tweaks yesterday in terms of the order of things and what we want to say, and cutting some cartoons here, maybe adding one there. And so we'll see tonight. You know, we started yesterday. Today we have another rehearsal at 2:00, and then tonight we'll sort of do a run through of the piece, and then tomorrow we have our first audience. So it's quick and dirty. Our headline, our poster said, "You've masked, you've vaxxed, now it's time to laugh." That's kind of our motto.
Ellen, thank you for taking us behind the scenes of the Four Anglos Survive the COVID Apocalypse. Much
surviving,
appreciated.
Surviving.
Surviving.
Yeah, we're about to add that. Yeah.
Surviving the COVID Apocalypse. Enjoy this weekend. Do we say break a leg if you're director as well? Is that part
sure?
Of
you,
the,
I'll take anything I can get.
Thank you so much.
A pleasure once again to be talking to you.
That was Ellen David, the director of Four Anglos Surviving the COVID Apocalypse. I heard from Ellen after last weekend's shows at Theatre Lac Brome. She sent me an image of a full audience taken by Terry Mosher from the stage. Everyone was masked, and she said the reaction from audiences was powerful. Those three shows all sold out, and now the crew comes to Montreal. That's Bowser and Blue, Josh Fried, and Terry Mosher, aka Aislinn. You can see their new show this weekend and next, November 5th and 6th, and 10th through the 13th. This space is called Centre St. Jack's. It's located at 1439 St. Catherine Street West, next to Concordia's downtown campus. There's actually parking in the nearby library building on campus, but it's otherwise located near Guy Concordia Metro. If you take public transit, you can get your tickets at stjax.org. That is stjax.org. Remember the shows November 5th to the 6th and 10th to the 13th.
I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come this evening, a choreographer creates a choose-your-own-adventure-style show where you get to decide what performances to see and for how long, all in service of the question, who am I? Tonight is a big night for Zach Frazier. It's opening night, and for the puppeteer, performer, teacher, and director, he is overseeing his first production as artistic director at Infinitheater. And not only that, but it's the company's first foray back to live performance in these pandemic times. Zach has picked a show that he is wildly passionate about, a tragicomedy one-man show titled Omi Muna, A Fantastical Encounter with My Great-Grandmother. It's a personal story from actor, director, and author Mohsen Algharbi, based on a trip he took to visit his great-grandmother in Tunisia. Our hero was treated brutally while growing up by his father, and concerned about family succession, he slips into the role of a memory archaeologist of sorts, trying to find the root of his father's violence by interrogating his great-grandmother, only to discover that she too has had her long life marred by brutality. Dark themes, to be sure, but with a touch of gentle humor. Omi Muna is what Mohsen calls his great-grandmother. From what I understand, Omi means grandmother in Flemish, which is the native language of his mother, and Muna means wishes or dreams in Arabic. Mohsen Algharbi was raised in Belgium by his Flemish mother and Tunisian father, and he studied and worked in Brussels for years, but Mohsen has been in Montreal since 1997. He's actually performed Omi Muna extensively, but in French, touring it through Quebec and New Brunswick. Mohsen has performed in English before, notably in an Infinitheater production of Mr. Goldberg Goes to Tel Aviv, but this is his first substantial foray into the language. Omi Muna was translated by Liana Brody, a prolific translator of Quebec plays, and director Zach Frazier says Mohsen is a seasoned storyteller who will wow audiences, a perfect show for returning to live performance. I spoke with Zach earlier this week. He was set up at the venue Kin Experience in between rehearsals. We talked about the show and his first foray into being artistic director at Infinitheater. Welcome to Upstage, Zach. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Sarah.
And congratulations. Big first presentation with under your tenure of running the show at Infinitheater. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling eager to see audiences again, because it's actually been an okay blessing in disguise, the fact that things were a bit slow to start. Not to say that we don't want to be making theater, but it gave me a little bit of time last season, at the end of season two, find my bearings with the theater. And so now we're definitely impatiently ready to get back into a space, which this is literally my first day in the venue where we're performing Kin Experience for this run, and seeing everything get back into seeing a theater. And the way that we do at Infinite Theater, we're often building up theaters from the ground up. So we're doing that again here.
Did you say that today is your first day at the venue?
Yes. Now, this is actually last fall, we did a production of King of Canada in the same building, but in the downstairs space, and now we're upstairs. Of course, for that production, we were literally ready to open to audiences when Montreal had the lockdown, and so that show never really saw a live audience. So it's technically the second time that we do a run here, but this will be hopefully the first one with an actual audience in the space with us. So, and this is the first day. So the team came in yesterday, and we're building up the theater space. And it's the old Sam the Record Man building on Saint Catherine, just facing the Belgo building, for anyone who knows that, near Quartier des Spectacles.
Yes, and the venue is called Kin Experience. And another reference point, I think, is that it's just east of the Hudson's Bay building.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, it's Kin Experience is a multi-purpose space. There's a lot of live music here and other events. We're the first company to do theater here. We've done a reading here last year, actually of Mazel Tov, which we'll be presenting later in the year here. But it's really nice downtown space. It's a nice old building. I know folks on the radio can't see this, but there's nice, lots of nice brick walls. There's beautiful wood floors, big solid iron framework of the building. And it is, it does have history to the building. So it's a nice space to be in.
Yeah, you're actually, you have a beautiful brick wall as your background, and you're actually hiding right now in the restroom at the venue where it's quiet.
This is
and I'm like, if that's what the bathroom looks like, everything else is going to look amazing.
Absolutely. No, it's a nice space, and it just brings warmth. I like feeling a space that has history to it.
So speaking of history, you had just mentioned King of Canada, this really quirky play that you presented last fall, where things kind of, we went into lockdown again, right as the show was about to be presented, with Guy Sprung as artistic director at the time.
That's right.
But it was still presented online, so people kind of were able to be home with that presentation.
Mm-hmm.
But to have this very first in-person show at this time must be just tremendously exciting. It's also in a way you're putting your stamp on Infinite Theater as artistic director. Do you feel like that lowers the stakes or raises the stakes for you as an artist and and as the boss?
For sure it raises the stakes in so many ways. This is the first show in front of audiences that I programmed from start to finish. When any new AD comes in, you're looking at, you know, how do you maintain what the company is and how do you help grow what the company is and how do you push your audiences into new territory? You want to keep things new and exciting. Our first two shows, Omimuna and then The Silence of Sky, which is soon after in late November and December, they're both solo shows. They're both locally based artists who are really multi-talented artists in so many ways. They write their own work, they perform their own work, they're creators with very distinct voices, with very distinct life experience that they bring to the stage with them. And so and that's the case with Mohsen and the show. It's a piece that's very dear to his heart. I've known Mohsen for a long time. I'd seen the show in French. I think it's a really beautiful piece, and especially in a time where a lot of theaters are feeling nervous about coming back and the risks of coming back to live theater, I think it's a nice piece for that. It's an intimate piece. We're okay. We don't need a big crowd to make it magical here. It's very simple storytelling, but it transports you. It's got some elements of magic realism. It's somewhat autobiographical, but also plays with the form of theater, and it explores a wide range of emotions. And what I really like about this piece is I really feel like as the audience, you are transported. He takes you from Montreal to a little village in Tunisia. He takes you from now back 100 years, and it's a fun ride. I mean, you know, I say fun ride, and yet it's a poignant, it's a powerful piece. It's dealing with a lot of his family history that's not always easy to deal with. So, but he does that in as a performer with a lot of grace.
I like your kind of caveat that it's a fun ride, but of course this is, you know, a deep, serious work here.
Well, and you know what? As I think Mohsen is actually it's a tough thing to do as a performer, but I think he does it in this piece. It really does. You can jump between. And I think that I like theater that I like storytelling where I think humor opens up the audience and then allows us to trust the performer, but then to go into more delicate territory as well. But it can't just be heavy. There's a balance to be found. There's a craft to taking an audience on a journey like that.
And I want to get into the performer here. I'm speaking with Zach Fraser, who is the co-director of Omimuna, which comes to Kin Experience downtown Montreal this week until the 14th of November, Infinite Theater's first live production in the pandemic. So Zach, tell us about Mohsen. You've worked with him, or he's worked with Infinite Theater before, so there's a long-standing relationship there. Tell me about him as a performer.
I mean, it's funny. I met Mohsen, you know, I like to think that we're a big town, but we're also a small town in Montreal in many ways. And I've known Mohsen for a very long time. He and I both trained in similar types of schools overseas. Mohsen's originally from Belgium. He's been here for, I should know this, but I'm going to say he's been here about 20 years in Montreal. We were both sort of newcomers. I'm from Nova Scotia. I came, I've been almost 20 years. And so we've both had, you know, these are cities that we've adopted. They're not cities that we were born in. Or I guess the cities hopefully adopted us too. Mohsen often works, he's got several solo shows he's done, and often it, there's been a, Mohsen's not scared of going into dark comedy, dark humor, and he's also really curious about just what goes on in the human mind and what takes people to dark places sometimes. But he's a big kid as well. He's a very playful performer. He's very physical and he loves language. So there's a really nice balance. He's very rigorous in his work. And yet, you know, he's got his own, he's like many other actors, he's got his life as a performer where he goes off and works for others, but he's got this long history of creating his own work as well and finding the audience that suits it. With Infinite, he's performed in the past, and Mr. Goldberg Goes to Tel Aviv in a very physical work. Most of the time, Mohsen performs in French, and this is really a big thing for him, a big feat for him, because this is one entire solo show in English for him. So it's the first time, it's the English language premiere, it's the first show he takes from French into English. I'm really excited to introduce Anglophone audiences in a bigger way to Mohsen and his work and his style of storytelling. And I think that that's part of what happens in, I find that different cultures have different ways of telling stories, different aesthetics, different approaches, different senses of humor. And I like bringing that to an Anglophone audience, that he comes with his baggage, his techniques, that I don't think are the norm for what we're used to. It's not the same way as we're used to hearing stories. And I think that that's nice and enriching for us.
What are some ways, maybe you show me an example of how he might strike someone as a bit different from the typical storyteller who's speaking in English and performing in English?
You know, it's weird. I mean, it's a fair question. And I don't know if this is going to sound weird as an answer, but it's like, if I watch a foreign film with subtitles, I don't even know all the nuances that come with that culture, but there is, different cultures have different flavors to them. If I'm watching a Korean film, if I'm watching a Brazilian film, there's a flavor to it. There's just different seasoning. There's different spices. There's different aromas that come with it. And for sure, humor is one of those things as well. So, and the way that we approach things, even within Montreal, I find it's interesting. You know, in a very simple way, you could say, you know, the Francophone culture has a different approach to theater making and a different sense of humor, and the Anglophone community has a different one, and there's a whole bunch in that sense. I love traveling. I love going around the world and meeting different people with different life experiences and seeing what that brings to me. And I feel like Mohsen brings a bit of that to him in his work. That's a bit vague, but that's kind of, I don't know if that's a sufficient answer.
You've given us a soupçon, a little taste of like soupçon, what, yes, what you're coming from there.
Yeah.
I'm speaking with Zach Fraser, who is the co-director of Omi Muna, a fantastical encounter with my great grandmother, coming to Kin Experience downtown St. Catherine starting this week until November 14th. And it's presented by Infinite Theatre. And this is Zach's first production as the artistic director at Infinite Theatre. So let's talk a little bit about the story, Omi Muna. And obviously there's been a French show beforehand. This is the English language premiere. How did Mohsen come to want to tell this story about his great-grandmother, who was originally from Tunisia?
This has actually been a long journey for Mohsen. And even as we started the rehearsal process on the first day, he was reminding me and reminding our stage manager, Elisa, of the multitude of steps and the number of different forms of scripts, drafts of scripts that are entirely different from this one that he's gone through for many years. Like where to find the starting point, I'd say like some of the story for him started about 20 years ago in terms of his real curiosity as a young man, wanting to understand his family history, going to Tunisia. He's gone on multiple occasions to the village, the home village of his great grandmother and where he has much family. he created a monologue that was very much exploring. He's very interested in family dynamics and his relationship with his father, his relationship with his mother, and then his great grandmother and her relationship to her husband and to her children. And ultimately this piece is connecting him with all of those different relationships through his great grandmother. He's written the form in French evolved multiple times, and it had different focuses where it wasn't always about his grandmother and great-grandmother, sorry, Omi Muna. And then he also went to the point of creating a short film, sort of a documentary film about her as well. And so he went back several years ago and filmed a bunch of footage again, which is just another complimentary piece to this piece. Liana Brody, who's the one who translated the piece, she'd seen it in French. And she was just, you know, she's translated several works from Quebec writers, and she was just like, I love this story. As a bridge between language communities, she was just like, I love the story, and I'd really love to translate it. So she approached Mohsen. That has taken on time. The translation's been in the works over the last year, 6 months in particular. And had we had a preview run at Impact Festival in Kitchener just about a month ago, and that was just a trial run. And then from there we went into the rehearsal hall. And because this is such a personal story to Mohsen, as he grows as an adult and as he has two young daughters and a son, his relationship to the story continues to change, and he's comfortable examining it from a different perspective now than he was, say, even a year ago. There's new writing that comes in along the way. Last year there was a new piece that came in. This is like, now I have to speak of it like really bluntly, and now I need to speak about it more poetically or as a parable. So it's not a remount, that's for sure. Every time he comes back to the show, it continues to evolve, and new people in the room with him takes it to new places.
It's a growing, living thing, and to get to see the show this November is kind of a unique experience in and of itself, because it'll be different from the past iterations and different from the future iterations. Mm-hmm. Zach, thank you so much for taking the time to tell us about Omi Muna and Marriage for this week.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Come out and see the show.
That was Zach Fraser, director of Omi Muna and artistic director of Infinitheater. Omi Muna is not only Zach's first show as artistic director, but it serves as the company's return to the stage tonight. Omi Muna, A Fantastical Encounter with My Great-Grandmother, opens this evening at Kin Experience. It runs until November 14th. You can catch performer Mohsen El-Gharbi by reserving your ticket online at infinitheater.com, infinitheater.com, or by calling 514-987-1774, extension 104. 514-987-1774, extension 104. The address is 397A St. Catherine Street West, McGill or Place des Arts Metro. Tickets are between $25 and $30 with discounts available. I'm Sarah DeAy, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Lynn No wants to put you in the driver's seat. That is to say, the Montreal-based choreographer has arranged her new piece like a choose-your-own-adventure book. Audience members enter every 15 minutes to stay as long as they like. The show is 4 hours long, and you move through 5 rooms, each with different lighting and a different dancer within. The organizers say the experience unfolds like a kaleidoscope, the space serving as a playground. There are 4 dancers, as well as a curious 5th entity, a performer who appears through a camera monitor, interjecting with visuals and sound. At the heart of this adventure, nom du nom, is the question, who am I? By giving you the ability to choose how to move through the show, Lynn No hopes to set you on a journey to explore the show, as well as your own identity. I spoke with Lynn earlier this week, before the show opened at Agora de la Danse. Welcome, Lynn, to Upstage. Thank you so much for being here. How are you today?
Nice. Thank you for inviting me.
No, thank you so much for being here. So Nom de Nom, in my view, seems to be a lot of different things. We've got five different installations, we've got four performers, and then we have another entity or person who's kind of analyzing the work and kind of creating something separate at the same time. There's a lot going on. Am I correct in thinking that?
Yes, you're correct, but it's all about the same questioning. It's like a five installation with kind of five different view about what we are and what I am, about questioning about qui suis-je, or what are we really in our essence or pure nature. So all the installation is questioning that by a really a technological. Each installation is interactive with the performer, so it means that they, when they arrive in the installation, their presence, active sound or image, reveal what we see differently. So it's always a kind of another view of what we are seeing to what we think we see. So it's kind of making the visitor and even the performer questioning what they really are or what they think they do and what finally appear through that. So that's why it's five different things, but it's all about the same question.
What interests you about the question of who am I? My identity.
Interesting to it through my body perspective of practicing with somatic education and with through Zen practice for a long period, but also with about what we do with our image now that we really send image of us every seconds right. on the media and everything, and we try to always reconstruct this image of ourselves. And in this era period, that questioning of gender, of or cultural, where we come, and all of this aspect, I was interested to asking this question as a more fundamental point of view before that. Before your gender or non-gender or your color or your where do you come from, mm-hmm. what are you? And I think it's where the question for me it's pretty accurate and bring some other of answer that there is no answer and it's always escaping to you. And this is a bit the way. The work is done because the visitor is walking through the installation and the performer too are kind of in that quest of questioning and the interactivity always bring them in another revelation of what they think they are. So it's kind of something who's always reinform and change each time.
And you made a deliberate choice for there to be kind of no point A to point B to point C conclusion.
Exactly, yes. Because I think the way we put the space, it's that you can always have two or three different point of view from where you are. You always have at least two installations that you can see. So it means that you choose where you see and where you sit and where you walk, and your perspective is going to give something different from the other person who's looking at it from another place. So, and for me, that's the place who's the more interesting, because I don't want to direct the visitor. I want him to being questioning himself about what he sees. So with his own that I give to the visitor to make his own visit by his own time. Mm-hmm. Like if you go in a museum, you take the time you want, where you want. And for now, in that project, it's a bit like that. But the performer gives some event at some moment, and there, everywhere in the space, on different space, but you can choose to decide what you're going to see and what you're going to take or not.
I'm speaking with Lynn No, who is the creator of Nom de Nom. Can I ask you about the title too? Because it's another kind of emphasis on openness, right? That things are open to interpretation, that not everything is set in stone.
Yes, exactly. In French, nom de nom is a kind of expression that I heard from where I'm young. It's like, it's a bit like, oh my God, you know, nom de nom. It's like, oh, it's impossible, something like that. But it's a kind of a play with it too. Yes.
Someone who is recording on a camera at the same time.
Yeah, the fifth performer is Alexandre Saint-Onge, who's a kind of, for me, a sommité or a kind of a, my God in performance. It's really somebody who's really, really radical in his way of performing, the way he's doing performance, and he's having a way of doing things that he's never appearing really in. What he do is always in a adjacent piece, and there's an aspect of that in my project, that the fact that there's one of the installation that we don't see the face of the performance, they're just doing a kind of task, quotidian task in a camera, but with funny angle that we don't really see them, and it just in their own intimacy and their own private things. And Alexandre, who's in Quebec City, put some layers onto that. It's like if the two screens are superposed and is revealing or hiding something they do, like a kind of a entity or a cloud or a god who's just a kind of funny god or Manitou just coming to give a fog over that. So that's the way he's playing with that. He's having his own television just for him, but he's appear in another one with this fifth installation in their refuge that he interact. And also he interact in the big room too with his voice at some different point of the 4-hour performance. In like in every hours there's kind of a funny ritual that brings the 4 performance together, mm-hmm. and is giving a kind of a sound performance who's coming suddenly in all the room of the agora. For the other part is just in one room in one piece, but is really kind of put is a kind of a entity non-presence in what they do. So but he's performing for 4 hours from his apartment in Quebec City.
Right. Now, yeah. He's using equipment. There is kind of other digital stuff going on as well, but that is just a means to an end, right? You're not making a big statement about the view when using cameras and digital media necessarily.
Yeah, there is a lot of, there's kind of 9 or 10 different projection in the piece, and all of the systems, all of the installation are interactive, but also they operate by themselves. Like there is no régie, there's not a technician. It's like automized, that the performer are having things that the programmation make that the machine recognize them where they are, and they by their presence they restart the interactivity. It's changing the light, changing sound, changing things. So it's a kind of really. They kind of decide what is going to happen with the interactivity. So it's not like a show that you have somebody at the régie and putting on a cue or something like that. It's really all automize with the movement and the displacement of the performer.
This is also just an enormous performance for Alexandre and the four dancers, because it's going to be lasting 4 hours, but yeah, the audience isn't there for the entire time necessarily, right? They're coming in different tranches, 15 minutes,
yes,
every
exactly.
15?
Okay. Yeah, we think that probably people's going to stay there for hour 15, maybe some less, maybe some are going to decide to stay a bit longer. Because it's COVID now, we have to assure that there's not more than an amount of person, and we can see if somebody's there for an hour and a half, maybe we're going to say you have to slowly get yeah. out because we don't have choice. Idealement, we would like that the person, people can stay as long as they want, but it's not going to be the case because COVID asks us to kind of count a bit how many people there is in the piece, in the place.
And I guess as well, it still kind of fits into the idea of individuality, and you get to choose your own adventure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and people are probably going to come with some friends or things like that, but as soon as they're there, they just can hang and decide to see each other, walk together or not. So it's kind of fun for that. You're not tied together. So it's good.
Well, Lynn, it's been just a pleasure to find out a bit more about your work and Nom de Nom. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much. I hope you're gonna come and see the work. It's pretty interesting to watch. Thank you.
That was choreographer Lynn No. Her new work, Nom de Nom, launches a week from today, November 11th until the 13th. The title is three words. I know it's a bit tricky. It's spelled N-O-N-D-E-N-O-M, so no name, basically. The show runs for 4 hours with timed entry every 15 minutes. It takes place at the Espace Wilder Agora space, Agora de la Danse, at 1435 de Blury, next to Place des Arts Metro. Tickets are $25. Get yours at agoradanse.com, agoradanse.com, or call 514-525-1500. Performers include dancers Audrey Belgeron, Tony Chong, Jessica Surley, and Peter Trotzmer, and the fifth entity on a camera monitor, Alexandre Saint-Ange. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight you heard Ellen David, director of Four Anglos Surviving the COVID Apocalypse, on at St. Jack's Center this weekend. Zach Fraser of Infinite Theater directing Omi Muna, launching at Kin Experience tonight. And Lynn No, creator of Nom de Nom, coming to Agora de la Danse next weekend. A very big thank you to all my guests. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under the archives. If you're looking for something to do this weekend, you can check out Omi Muna or the Four Anglos Surviving the COVID Apocalypse. Every Brilliant Thing continues at the Siegel Center. And as well, I'd love to recommend Ballet Jazz de Montréal, Vanishing Melodies, their new work celebrating their 50th anniversary and their first performance since pandemic times. All the music is taken from the catalog of Patrick Watson. Patrick Watson, indie artist, pianist, singer, songwriter, originally from Hudson. He's been performing, I want to say, for about 15 years now. His music has a real cinematic quality to it. His voice is really melodic. I'm a bit of a big fan, as you can tell. We'll end the show this evening with some Patrick Watson music. The Ballet Jazz de Montréal show, Vanishing Melodies, continues tonight through Saturday at Place des Arts. I can't recommend it enough. The dancers are wearing these beautiful earth tone costumes. It's about memory. It's about accidents. It's about all sorts of different things. I hope you can check it out. It was a great fun. You can check out placedesarts.com for tickets and more information. Thank you so much to Jack Soler, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air, and a very big thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah Day. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. Have fun, stay safe. Up next is Gray Matters.
If you have flu-like or COVID-19-like symptoms, such as fever, cough, loss of taste or smell, or if you have been in contact with someone infected with the virus, it's essential to get tested and to follow isolation instructions, even if you're vaccinated. Screening remains one of the best.
Welcome to the November 4th edition of Gray Matters. Tonight on the show, we have part one of a two-part series. We played part two last week by Tariq Ali. Tariq Ali is an internationally renowned writer and activist born in Lahore, Pakistan. For many years, he's been based in London, where he is an editor of the New Left Review. He's a charismatic speaker in great demand all over the world. In his spare time, he is a filmmaker, playwright, and novelist. He's the author of many books, including The Clash of Fundamentalisms, Pirates of the Caribbean, Speaking of Empires and Resistance with David Barsamian, The Duel, Pakistan on the Flight Path of American Power, The Obama Syndrome, The Extreme Center, and The 40-Year War in Afghanistan, A Chronicle Foretold. Tonight, his lecture is entitled Afghanistan, China, and the Decline of U.S. Power. Part one. We heard part two last week. Here he is, Afghanistan, China, and the Decline of U.S. Power.
Beijing's Belt and Road Initiative is a gigantic economic plan to try and